Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. I've been doing news now for 30 years, two languages all over the world, here in the United States. Interviewed four presidents, worked at four of the U.S.'s major television networks. I don't like what they do. I think news should be honest, direct, and impactful. And this is direct impact. And we're starting with the obvious, right? These Hamas attacks on Israeli citizens, and most of all, the massacre that we all saw at the music festival, it did seem to shock the world. It was unexpected, and Israel seemed caught by surprise. However, since the attack, a lot of questions have been raised as to, well, how is it that the most sophisticated intelligence apparatus in the entire world could have been caught flat-footed? Egyptian officials say, for their part, they privately warned Prime Minister Netanyahu and his government that there was an attack coming. Did Prime Minister Netanyahu ignore the warning? And if he did so, why would he ignore the warning? It's being asked. Netanyahu's being criticized within his own country, most pointedly by the newspaper Haaretz. I want you to hear this. This is how Haaretz describes their prime minister's predicament.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is now counting on fatigue and public despair to help him stay in office, but he can't be trusted to manage a war, and it won't save him from an enduring legacy of failure.
That's an Israeli newspaper. Moving past what may be a defense or intelligence blunder, as many Israeli citizens are suggesting, there was, at least at the outset, when right after Hamas attacked, a reaction that it didn't matter. A sense that even among Israel's detractors, the attack by Hamas was so wrong that it now made Israel the victims in this case, a place they usually aren't in the world community. But guess what? That sentiment, it seems to be waning now. Why? Well, because Palestinians, even those who do not support Hamas, are now being killed at several times the number that Hamas killed Israelis. And the killing of mostly civilians is being carried out by none other than the world's most potent military powers, with the help of one of the world's most potent military powers, the United States. Those optics aren't good. They're just not good for Israel, especially considering that the Palestinians have no place to go while they're being attacked. And Israel has generally not allowed them to leave, nor have they been allowing them to get relief supplies like food and water and medicine. So, really, the only place for Palestinians to avoid the bombs is in presumed safe places. Like what? Schools? Hospitals? Religious centers? But then this happened. 500 Palestinians killed when, at a hospital, these Palestinians were seeking refuge is bombed. The whole world saw it. Israel says, look, we didn't do it. But in the Arab world, no one believes them, evident from the unrest that hasn't stopped in places like Jordan and Egypt and Turkey and Indonesia and Malaysia, parts of India, and many more. There were also protests inside the U.S. Capitol where young Jewish Americans here in the United States, protesters were arrested or allowed themselves to be arrested, demanding that Israel declare a ceasefire. Also, looking at the backside of this was the cancellation of the summit where President Biden would have met with Jordan's King Abdullah, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, Egyptian President Fatah al-Sisi. And it was canceled. Didn't happen. They didn't want to meet with him because of what's going on. Important note here, though, that Egyptian President Sisi did meet with somebody else. He met with China's President Xi recently. Now, how's that for optics? The cancellation of the Jordan summit and the sense that Israel may be overplaying its hand against Palestinian civilians seems to be causing a fear that the conflict is going to spread to other countries. It's what we're hearing, right? And it's not helping that some leaders are kind of going out of their way to inflame the tensions with heated, some would even argue, irresponsible rhetoric like this, this utterance from, this is U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham.
Hamas attackers are animals, but the real culprit here is Iran. Without aid from Iran, there would be no Hamas capability to attack Israel. I think it is long past time for the United States to put Iran on notice that you have killed and destroyed enough that you're going to pay a price.
Sounds like he wants to declare war. Tough talk, but is that the right thing to be saying at this time? Then there's a Spanish minister. Her name is Ioana Valera. She says Israel prime ministers should be tried by the International Criminal Court immediately.
In addition, we ask our partner, the Socialist Party, to work together to present, on behalf of the government of Spain, a petition to the Prosecutor's Office of the International Criminal Court to investigate the war crimes committed in Palestine by Netanyahu, as was done recently in the case of the Spanish aid worker murdered in the Ukrainian war, as well as those perpetrated by Hamas in Israel and occupied territories against the civilian population.
Now, beyond the political rhetoric, which is coming in droves, there are also real-world signs of escalation that are already at play here. The U.S. is continuing to send rapid response teams of 2,000 Marines and sailors into the region, and it's also deploying warships, including the aircraft carrier, the Gerald Ford, the Dwight D. Eisenhower. The aim of this deployment is really twofold. Assist Israel militarily, and then perhaps more important, to keep Iran out.
Made it clear to the Iranians, be careful.
Be careful, Iran. We're hearing a lot about Iran these days, and most of it's coming from our own country. Iran, for its part, is making it clear it does not want any further escalation. That's what they're saying. But according to a report in Axios, they're also warning that it will intervene if the attacks on Gaza continue or get worse. And then there's Hezbollah. Israel is now striking parts of Lebanon and Syria, which they say is a response to rocket fire. UN peacekeepers, by the way, have already confirmed, yes, there is border clashes and rocket fire taking place in that part of the world. In the U.S., both the corporate media and most of the business community, including billionaire donors of universities, are defending Israel and threatening to pull their funding if others don't agree with them. Look, money talks, and so does billionaire Ronald Lauder. He's a powerful financial backer of the University of Pennsylvania, who says he will stop sending money to the school, stop sending money to the University of Pennsylvania if it doesn't stop the pro-Palestinian protests on campus. And there's more money talking in the form of billionaire hedge fund manager Bill Ackman, insisting that Harvard release the names of the students that have been putting out pro-Palestinian pamphlets. Why does he want their names released? So they can be blackballed, blacklisted, and not hired in the future by employers when they go out looking for work. It's interesting. On the other side, there are examples that the rhetoric is equally heightened for. I'll give you an example in this case. There's a Yale University professor, and he came out and said that Hamas was right to kill Israeli civilians. The comment is causing for some people to say that he should be fired. Then, after all of that, there's the geopolitical impact of all of this. Now, we want to be comprehensive about this. This matters. Where it now appears that the conflict between Israel and Gaza is shifting the focus away from the conflict in Ukraine. Both President Biden and Fed Chair Janet Yellen are assuring the world that U.S. taxpayers, that would be me, can and will continue to send tens of billions of dollars to both countries. The Ukrainians, fearing that both publicly and privately their cause and need for funding will be is going to be replaced now by Israel's need for funding is obviously concerned. And if that happens, without U.S. funding in particular, their counteroffensive, already at an impasse, will likely ground to a halt, especially with a new U.S. speaker who is critical of sending money to Ukraine, and Twitter owner Elon Musk saying essentially that the counteroffensive, the Ukrainian counteroffensive, has failed, and it's time to sit down and talk to Russia and find a way toward a truce. This is a really important topic and one that people all over the world are watching. And I think it's important to bring in a guest now who's been keen on this topic for the better part of his adult life. Joining us now is Felipe Coronel. He is also known throughout the world and probably by many of you who are about to see him or are seeing him already as Immortal Technique, or Tech, as many of us call him. Many know him as a rap artist, but actually he's also very much an activist who's been engaged in these types of topics for many years. And I guess, given what's going on right now between Hamas and Israel, Tech, let me just start with a question a lot of people are asking themselves, whether what, no matter what side you're on, did Israel have a right to defend itself against this surprise attack, as it's being called, by Hamas?
I mean, I think every question, unfortunately, with this conflict isn't an easy one to answer, because you're talking about something that happened in the middle of something else, right? Like, for example, and I'm not trying to deflect it, if you want me to answer the question directly, mm-hmm. I can, based on international law or anything else. But imagine if someone stole my wallet and I chased after that person down the street and I hit them in the head with a bat. And when they were down on the ground, I just kept hitting them. Once they had already been down or whatever, and I took my wallet back to the rest of the world, and to myself, I seem very justified in everything that I've done, because I feel like someone is taking something from me. But to the rest of the world and people who are just seeing it now, they've committed a crime, and an unconscionable one. And I think that what we have now here is kind of no context to what happened. So people will say, okay, this happened yesterday, like as if the war in Ukraine started.
This is a very important point that you're making. This is, boy, I'll tell you, and I'm glad you're going there, because this goes right to the root of the problem, and especially as it relates to corporate media and Western media. This week, we saw Anderson Cooper, and we saw this one, and we saw that one, and all the anchors and all the reporters are suddenly showing up, covering this story live and in the flesh in Hamas's areas and in Israel's areas and all over that region. Prior to this, they hadn't been there in a decade or so. So it takes one side of the story to be affected for them to engage. You mentioned Ukraine, same thing. The Ukraine problem started in 2014, at least, if not sooner. And yet it was only until recently that the U.S. media started covering it full blown. It's about only covering part of the story. And that's the problem I do believe we have, nothing else from a media standpoint. So I take your point, Tech. I take your point.
Look, I've posted a lot of things on my social media about the people that were kidnapped, the people that are dead. I definitely expressed the death toll on both sides. But I think that irrespective of doing that, there are people that will be unhappy unless you represent what their perspective is on a very, very polarized topic that's not going to be resolved. I mean, listen, conservatives and Democrats here have joined together to support Israel and to give them a blank check at this point. So it's not something that we can see drawn clearly upon party lines. And even in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, there is a rift that has always existed when it comes to Israel and Palestine.
What will the geopolitical consequences of this be for the United States, for Lebanon, for Iran, obviously for the Palestinian Authority, and for Israel? This is where now the rubber meets the road, because it goes beyond what's happening in this little sphere. It's what might happen and the effects that's going to have on other perhaps conflicts in the world, like Ukraine. And that's what I want to talk about when we come back. We're talking to Immortal Technique. He is a rap artist, an activist. Some know him as Felipe Coronel, especially his mother. We are going to be back with Tech in just a little bit. Stay there, Tech. We'll be right back. By the way, I'd like to continue this conversation with you. What do you say we do so on Twitter or X or whatever it's being called these days? My handle is Rick Sanchez TV. Look for me, Rick Sanchez TV, and I will see you there when we come back. Israel and Gaza dominating the news. Congress is stepping up its aid to Israel, and an old flame is not feeling the love. Is the U.S. turning its back on Kiev? We are going to take a look at that. Stay with us.
In 1834, France invaded Algeria, and straight away the French started inhabiting it to strengthen their position. The colonists, known as Pieds Noirs, took the best land. From day one, the local population was put into an unequal position and was brutally exploited. This caused mass discontent. The people of Algeria began their long-term fight for independence. In 1954, the Banner of Freedom was raised by the National Liberation Front. A guerrilla war against the occupants broke out. The French tried to suppress the rebellion using cruel measures. Whole villages were wiped out. Acts of torture and executions of civil people, including pregnant women, children, and old people, took place. More than 2 million people were put into concentration camps. However, these punitive measures didn't help. The Algerian patriots managed to induce France to start peace negotiations. In 1962, Evian Accords were signed, putting Algeria on the path towards independence. But this was achieved at a colossal price. Algeria, by rights, is considered to be a country of martyrs. According to the calculations of historians, the French colonists are responsible for the deaths of 1.5 million Algerians.
I'll look forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence as own existence.
Let's revisit some of the latest once again. Because as if Ukrainian President Zelensky didn't have enough problems, now there's this. A report seeming to indicate that somehow the weapons used by Hamas to attack Israel came from Ukraine, or somehow the weapons that were sent to Ukraine. The report and social media video post, which was attributed to the BBC, appears to be, and this is important, fake. That is not true. Those weapons did not come from Ukraine. And the BBC and other sources are vehemently denying it. However, just the suggestion of this linkage between these two countries was already seen by hundreds of thousands of people and counting. And President Zelensky, who had announced that he had plans to travel to Israel to show solidarity with Netanyahu, has been told by the Israelis to just stay home. Not the right time, say the Israelis. And we're joined once again by Immortal Technique, Felipe Coronel. He's a rap artist and an activist, and he's very keen on this topic of what's going on right now between Israel and Hamas and, you know, possibly the rest of the world. I'm going to follow up with that situation because apparently we mentioned a while ago the situation in Ukraine. And it's interesting that the United States has been putting all of its muster on Ukraine, and both the Federal Reserve Chair and the president are saying, no, we're going to keep giving money to Ukraine. We're just now going to give money to both. We're going to give money to Ukraine, and we're going to give money to more money to Israel, $10 billion more for Israel. They're suggesting apparently we could be over $100 billion in Ukraine. And I guess the question is, because the Ukrainians are wondering about this, they're thinking there's no way they're going to continue to be able to fund us, not if this thing continues in Israel, that there's a possibility that we were not going to be able to do this. And I think the American people are going to raise up and say, hey, you know, enough is enough, right? What do you think is going to happen as a result? What the geopolitics of all this vis-a-vis Ukraine and this conflict, what happens, Tech?
Before I get into like the larger global aspect of it, there's something I wanted to say. When the Ukraine war became more public, there were lots of pictures that came out about that showed the naked reality of war. And one of them was of two little girls that had died. And one of them was Russian and the other one was Ukrainian. And I couldn't tell them apart. If I covered where they were from, I didn't know where they were from. And I saw the same thing in Israel and Gaza. I saw a little girl that had died in Israel, and I saw a little Palestinian girl, and I covered the names of where they were from, and I couldn't tell them apart. And I think it's important for me to say things like that because we can talk about the nuts and bolts of this, but the reality is that part of what we experience as people who either report the news or write lyrics or whatever poems about it is to always remember to humanize the people who we speak about and remember that the way that the mainstream media has worked for years is by describing them as numbers. Now, when it comes to like an expanding conflict, those numbers are going to get a lot bigger if the conflict isn't resolved quickly. There will be some intervention by Hezbollah. You know, whatever is left of Syria is still a country, and whatever is left of Iraq is still a country. I think that what I said before about the United States not being able to protect Israel isn't that it doesn't have the capacity to go to war with any country. The United States has an incredibly deadly military, and it's very efficient when it has to be. But what I mean is that in order to create a lasting peace, the only people that have influence in Lebanon, in all of these other countries, in Iran, would be a global partnership that the United States would have to have with Russia.
If we were to be optimistic, and we should try and be optimistic about this world, I also fear, you know, the coming of World War III, just given the scenario that's being drawn and some of the things that we're seeing. But I do think, and this is to your point, Tech, that it may be advantageous that there's a realignment going on in the world. Whereas in the past, the United States could come in and say, this is the way we're going to do it. And we're going to get our allies, France and the UK and a couple of others behind us. And sorry, it's Katie by the door. We don't care about anybody else's opinion. Now, all of a sudden, with BRICS and with Brazil and with India and with even to a certain extent Saudi Arabia and Iran and Russia and China, they actually may be able to be a counterforce for against Israel and the United States to keep them from their own undoing. And that's what I'm hearing you say. And maybe that's a point of optimism, no?
I don't know if they'd be a counterforce per se, because at the end of the day, the United States still has a massive army and has allies of its own to call. It also really is the master manipulator in terms of global politics. And that's what I think people have to understand. So where I see them balancing it out is what they're going to have to do if they want to avert a war which may hurt their allies. See, the United States has no patience for people who threaten them, but it does behave pragmatically, right? If a smaller state were to threaten the United States, a terrorist group, the United States will act. But if Kim Jong-il says, I'm going to blow you up, I'll blow up San Francisco go to hell, they have no choice but to just be like, okay, well, he's not shooting at us, so we're not going to blow him up. They practice not just selective outrage, but they're very, very surgical with the type of politics that they have. So will there be a counterbalance? I think that what we've seen is that the United States has never sought that in anything. And what's happened as a result of that is all of the post 9/11 wars. The only ally the United States seems to reliably have is the EU and Israel. And even the EU is contentious because that depends on who was getting a slice of Sykes-Picot. And then they decided whether they wanted to be in the war in Syria versus the war in Iraq. So it's right. not a reliable partner. But who is a reliable partner is always going to be the UK and Israel. They will go along with the United States like three people in any gang, which is what you have with Russia and its allies too. They'll be wrong in public to each other and not say anything, and then go behind closed doors and say, hey, you're making this very difficult for us. I mean, I know Biden isn't the one in charge. I think there's obvious signs of senility there, which is not funny, but at the same time, it's ridiculous that people don't. It's like the emperor's clothes. You know, everyone sees that this person is naked, but no one's saying anything. But he's obviously being told what to say. But even in that scenario, he has to recognize that, yes, the American military isn't incapable, but it's being overstretched. And now you have the lowest performance rate of recruitment in the U.S. military history ever in the modern era. So you're going to have to fill it with somebody.
You know what? We say it, and I consider myself a patriot. I consider myself someone who respects and loves this country, and that's why we criticize this country. And I think conversations like this, which you will never hear in any other normal corporate media, is designed so that we can point to the failures of our leadership, of our government, not necessarily the American people, who are being led blindly by the quote-unquote Anderson Coopers of the world, as I like to put them, or the Fox Newses of the world. It doesn't matter. To me, they're all kind of the same. And I think that's why these conversations are really important. And Tech, it's always a pleasure to be able to have these conversations with you. Thank you for your thoughts and for sharing your ideas with us, my friend. Hey, before we go, I want to remind you of our mission. It's simple, really. What we try and do here is de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes where we think only our truths matter and our truths live. Our truths, no truths, live in boxes. They're everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be looking for you right here again, where I hope to provide a direct impact.